Back in December, Governor Rick Snyder signed legislation paving the way for Michigan to become America's 24th right-to-work state. The controversial law takes effect tonight at midnight. Right-to-work prohibits mandatory payment of union dues as a condition of employment. Supporters, which include many Republicans, including Governor Rick Snyder, call the bill pro-worker and says it creates jobs. Opponents call it anti-union, anti-worker, and bad for the economy. Arguably, right-to-work has been the single most talked-about development in the state in recent months, possibly years. And here on the day before the law takes effect, we welcome two guests to discuss it. Jim Holcomb is Senior Vice President and General Counsel of the Michigan Chamber of Commerce. Hi, Jim.
Good morning.
And the Chamber was and is a right-to-work supporter. Doug Pratt is a spokesman for the Michigan Education Association, the state's biggest teachers union, which opposes right-to-work. Hi, Doug.
Good morning.
And full disclosure to start out here, WKAR Radio is affiliated with a union, and its members are represented by the Michigan Education Association. So, Doug, I got to bring it today, okay?
Bring it on.
He says bring it. I want to open by asking both of you how you feel about today, given what's happening. Jim Holcomb, is the advent of right to work a good day for Michigan?
I think it's a good day. It's good policy in our members' belief going forward, but we don't certainly don't see it as it's going to be a monumental day where all of a sudden the sun comes up tomorrow and it's a completely different landscape. This is, we believe, is going to be one element in continuing Michigan's revitalization, but it's not a silver bullet, but it is an important building block.
Doug Pratt, how do you feel about the last day of Michigan as a non-right-to-work state?
Well, it is a sad day, you know, for a lot of people, but I think it's another day in the fight for the middle class of this state. You know, right-to-work is nothing more than an attack on people's ability to come together and collectively bargain to have a better working condition, better wages, better benefits. And, you know, it is a sad day, but it's just another day in the continuing fight. This isn't over with.
Is there agreement regarding what exactly changes tonight at midnight? Are new hires at so-called closed shops, or what used to be called closed shops, are they no longer obligated to pay union dues?
Jim, no, the contracts stay in force until that contract runs out. So, you know, if there's a contract in place, it's still going to stay there until the next contract negotiation and re-upping at that point.
Okay. Jim Holcomb, how do you respond to assertions that unions are unquestionably responsible for higher wages, better benefits, better conditions, and so on, and that is a decision not to pay dues undoes that very basic contract?
Well, I certainly don't think it undoes it. Certainly unions are an important part of Michigan's history and the labor environment in general. But what this bill does and what this law is allowing is for people to make their own choice. Do they believe the union is right for them, and do they want to financially support it? All this does is says that you cannot be forced to financially contribute or belong to a union against your will. I would disagree with Doug on the standpoint of collective bargaining. Collective bargaining does not change under this law one bit. Everyone who wants to collectively bargain through their union still has that right to do so. All it says is the union can't force somebody to belong.
But if significant union resources are now in jeopardy, doesn't that reduce the ability of organized labor to promote their causes, to bargain, and to keep wages and benefits generally higher and better?
The only way union coffers could be significantly at risk is if their members don't believe they have providing good value and they don't want to belong anymore. At that point, what we're saying is it's the employee's right to make a decision whether they want to financially contribute. If the union doesn't have quite the resources to do what they want to do, that's because they haven't proven their worth and their value to the membership.
Or it's because, you know, there are forces out there. I mean, right now our members are getting robocalls from right-wing organizations saying, don't sign contracts. Don't belong to the union. Don't listen to what they're trying to tell you. We, for years at the Michigan Education Association, have been working with our members, showing value, but that's not what this is about. What right to work does, nobody is forced to join a union. That has always been against the law, but what right to work bans is the practice of including language in a contract that says if you don't want to belong to the union, you have to still pay your fair share of the cost of negotiating the contract. That is the only thing that Right to Work does. It makes that practice illegal. And so what you have is a situation where people can benefit from a contract without paying for it.
Is he right on that point,
Jim?
No,
he's not, because the U.S. Supreme Court has said numerous times that unions are allowed to have members-only contracts. What unions don't tell you is they don't want that because it hurts them. For instance, if you have a union contract and their layoffs maybe are based on seniority, you're going to want everyone within that contract, because if you have older workers who are under that contract, all the younger workers would just opt out of the union so they can't be the first ones laid off. All it is roping people into an agreement that they don't want to be a part of. You can have a members-only contract, and the union can say, we aren't going to represent you. But they don't want to do that for various reasons. Also, they don't want someone else to be able to negotiate on their own behalf. They may come up with a better deal. And then people in the union are going to say, well, why am I belonging to the union when I can do it on my own?
Doug, why don't you respond, then we'll move on.
The fact is, federal law says that if you have a union shop, if you have a group of people who are represented under a contract, you have to treat them all the same. The union has to represent everybody, regardless of whether or not they are paying. Now, that is a huge problem in terms of getting back to what Jim said about collective bargaining. These are people who are coming together and voting on a contract. They have a say. They have the ability to vote for a contract, up or down, based on their beliefs and what they want to do. And that's democracy. And this bill is fundamentally anti-democratic in that way.
I need to clear up one thing. It's not a true statement in my belief, and I guess the courts maybe are going to have to figure this out. But the U.S. Supreme Court has said you don't have to represent everybody. The NLRA, the Act, National Labor Relations Act, says you have the option to do that if you choose. It doesn't require them to do that. They do it for their own benefit, for a couple of the examples we just recently discussed.
Okay. Let's get some data out on the table. Both sides in this debate have pointed to numbers that they say bolster their case. Jim Holcomb, do you expect the number of jobs to be climbing in Michigan as a result of Right to Work?
Absolutely. We expect the numbers of jobs are going up. Michigan is on a rebound right now. This is an important step in that. As we stated before, it's not a silver bullet, but it's an important building block. And Michigan is going to move forward. We're going to have more jobs. If you look at the data out there, personal income, state job growth, gross state product, all significantly higher in states that have freedom to work.
Doug Pratt, respond to that, please.
That falls into the category of fun with averages. If Bill Gates walked into this studio right now, we would all, on average, be billionaires. But we'd all still have mortgages to pay, unfortunately. The fact is, when you really look at a clean economic analysis of the data, Right to Work is not a factor. It's not a factor in terms of personal income growth. You look at the states ranked in terms of personal income growth, the worst state in terms of growth and the best state in terms of growth are both free bargaining states. The second worst and the second best are Right to Work states. No, unemployment. Of the bottom six unemployment states right now, three of them are Right to Work, three of them aren't. You know, but it gets presented as if this is going to be a game changer. It's not a silver bullet. I will give Jim the credit that he's at least not saying that. But a lot of the proponents of this are walking out there saying that this is going to increase income. This is going to increase growth. But when you look at the real numbers, Right to Work states on average, again, playing with averages, mm-hmm. $1,500 less in terms of wages.
Jim, there is this widespread perception that it may well create more jobs, but they are worse jobs.
But I would disagree with worse jobs. And also, $1,500, if you look at many of the states where freedom to work currently is, it's a lower cost of living. They're going to make less regardless. But their quality and their standard of living is higher, which is important.
Less health care, less pensions, more worker safety. I don't know how that qualifies as a better quality of life. I don't care what the cost of living is,
Jim. If you look at all the statistical analysis and the PhDs are looking at, that's the data they're coming up with when they look at all the figures and all the different elements that go into this.
So the Economic Policy Institute last year did a survey comparing something that the Indiana Chamber of Commerce did that controlled for seven factors, ignoring all sorts of things about the economy of a state and drawing conclusions that right to work is good. The Economic Policy Institute covered something like 50 different factors. That's a real study.
And
the Mackinac Center continues that.
We did one at Michigan Chamber Foundation that covered 200. And what they say is personal income and freedom of work states between 2000 and 2010 up 40%. Michigan, 20%. Job growth. Michigan down 17%, freedom to work states up 5%.
What can you tell us about the hiring process now? I'm wondering if that's where the rubber may meet the road. Doug Pratt, if an administrator is interviewing a prospective teacher, will the subject of paying union dues come up during the interview? How will that work out? Do we know?
We don't know. I mean, it shouldn't. I mean, especially speaking from my standpoint, what should be coming up in an interview when you interview to hire a teacher or a school support person is their capacity to do the job. That's what's important, and that's what an administrator doing hiring should be talking about.
I'm really curious about how this is going to play out on the ground. That's really why I asked that question. Jim Holcomb, any thoughts on that?
No, I would agree. I would think any business, they're looking to hire the best person, whether you're hiring an educator in a school district or whether you're in a private business, or you want the best people in the best job so you get the best productivity.
Both of you expect dramatically different impacts from the very same law, but what about the timeline? Jim, the governor suggested that the passage of the law very quickly triggered some level of interest in the state from other companies. Have you looked at that? Is he right?
We've heard anecdotal evidence from people within state government saying that they've gotten a lot of contacts. We've also heard from many of our colleagues in states around the country who have, you know, other chamber executives that we talked to that said they were worried because many of their businesses in non-right-to-work states are now looking at Michigan, looking to leave other states and coming here. But it's all anecdotal at this point.
And Doug Pratt, what negative impacts from right-to-work are in store? And when are they going to be apparent?
You know, it's going to take time. I mean, this is not something that changes overnight. Just because the sun rises tomorrow doesn't mean things are going to be different in a lot of places. But it's going to be an issue that over time is going to have a negative impact on the wages and benefits of this state.
Doug, are you and other unions making efforts to promote more active promote the benefits of dues paying?
You know, certainly we are. I mean, but that's not
You're
something...
stepping that up.
Yeah, we're stepping that up, okay. But that's not to say that we haven't been doing it aggressively for a long time.
Okay. And there are, if memory serves here, four different legal actions, lawsuits involving right to work. Jim Holcomb, is the Michigan Chamber involved in any of these? Are you watching these?
We're certainly watching them. They're all kind of in the such early stages right now that there really isn't the ability or opportunity really for people to interject their thoughts, whether it's amicus or trying to file other lawsuits. So we're just kind of monitoring the situation. We were intrigued when the governor asked for the advisory opinion out of the Supreme Court. We haven't seen anything out of that yet, so we're still just kind of watching.
Doug, what about the MEA?
You know, we're involved in an open meetings lawsuit in terms of how they closed
right.
the Capitol down during all
right.
of this.
Right,
despite the fact that it was empty.
Open Meetings Act was violated during the
That's
debate.
That's what we contend.
Okay.
But I think we need to be clear on that. Just one point. The Capitol was closed down by the state Capitol Police. The legislators do not make that decision, and they did not make that decision. And also, the Capitol was open when the bill we're talking about was actually voted on.
Okay. We've got to leave it there. We could go on and on, but we've got to move on. Jim Holcomb is Senior Vice President and General Counsel of the Michigan Chamber of Commerce. The Chamber is a right-to-work supporter. Doug Pratt, a spokesman for the Michigan Education Association, which opposes right-to-work. Many thanks. Good luck to
Thank
both
you.
Of you.
Pleasure.